Okay, hello and welcome to the ReachMahjong.com podcast. I am Jen Barr, and I'm minus my normal co-host today, Garth Nelson, and instead we have a special guest. Many of you know him from all the tournaments in Europe, in China, in Japan, his blog, also on the ReachMahjong.com forums. Today we have Benjamin Boaz with us.
Good morning. Great to be here.
And it is morning. It's 10:45 a.m., about 45 minutes later than we expected to come in. Yeah, my computer is making noise. We're at Jen's house this morning. Just turn off the screen. That's so unprofessional, but it makes for a good story. So I hope all of you guys are enjoying. Since this is my first time being the main host of the podcast, we might have some bumps in here, but hopefully you will still listen to us. And we're going to talk about the league. We have two leagues to talk about since we didn't have a podcast in January. Also, we have some Mahjong news, and we are going to feature Ben instead of Strategy Talk this month. So we have lots to look forward to there. Also, since we didn't have a podcast in January, we'll have a new schedule coming out in March with a new website. So we have some ReachMahjong.com news as well to look at. In January, the biggest news, obviously, was the forums, and tons of you are up on the forums on ReachMahjong.com posting, and it's made all the content way better and made our readership go also way up, so thank you for that. And Ben, you're on the forums a lot. What do you think of the new forums?
It's great to have them back up. What has it been, about a year since they've been down? Something like that?
Yeah, they went down in June.
Last year. No, so it's nice. I got a whole backlog of things that I want to say, so I think I'll keep on posting for a little while.
And that's the great part about the forums, is you can get on there and say whatever you want. You can even talk crap about this podcast if you'd like, and give us reasons to improve it. Now let's take a short break, and we'll be right back with the league wrap-up.
I don't know, dude. I think everybody's all jealous and shit, cause I'm like the lead singer of the band, dude. And I think everybody's got a fucking problem with me, dude. And they need to take it up with me after the show. Because
these chicks don't even... You're listening to the Reach Mahjong podcast, exclusively at ReachMahjong.com. Join the Japan Professional Mahjong League's Jen Barr and Garth Nelson to get all of your Mahjong news, strategy, professional interviews, weekly meetups, and more at ReachMahjong.com. And we're back, and this month I am going to do the league wrap-up, since Garth isn't here. We had some schedule conflicts this time around. We'll start with A1 League. Now, since this was the last session, the A1 goes on to the Phoenix Cup, or the Hoi, which is basically the biggest tournament in Renmei and in JPML, and the very most difficult one. Excuse my grammar. The most difficult one to achieve. Last year's winner was Tomotake, and this year the three players that will be going against Tomotake are Shibata, Furukawa, who Garth is always fighting with on Mahjong Fight Club to get the most games, and Maehara Yudai. Most of them have been there since the beginning. I guess that's shown since they're in A1, but should be a good match, and that's happening this weekend, which I will not be attending because my birthday is tomorrow.
Yay.
Wait,
Garth really has the most games on Fight Club?
He's pretty close. Usually it's Furukawa and Sawazaki, and Garth is pretty close up there, but I heard a rumor that he hasn't been playing much this month.
Oh.
He's been a bit busy, so.
Huh.
Then we go to A2, and one of our companions at the Mahjong Super Cup in December, Ito Yuko, or Yuko Ito, depending on which way you want to say it, he will be moving back up to A1. He's been in A2 for a few years now. After being in A1 for a long time, he's the grade 9 in the Japan Professional Mahjong League, which is the highest you can achieve. And I think a lot of us were disappointed to see him move to A2, but now he's moving up to A1.
Good for him. Yeah. He's one of the few grade 9s who still plays, right?
Yeah. Him and Ara play. Ara is in A1, and he's still in A1. He will be staying this year as well. I think once Ara moves down to A2, he probably will stop playing, which I think is what happened with Moriyama. I'm not sure, but Moriyama is also grade 9, and he doesn't play anymore, as well as Hata, who is also grade 9 and doesn't play anymore, as well as Takeo Kojima. They just play in the big JPML tournaments, not in the league.
Good for Ito, though. He's fun. What was his nickname? Like Shinigami, Angel of Death? He looks like one, too.
He really looks like the Japanese kind of Yakuza poster boy. And actually, I wrote this on the forums, I think, but he was a big Junkyu guy.
Mm.
Like, he was playing according to the Junkyu rules and stuff. And one time, I think it was a few weeks ago, on Ronron, I was reading the manager's blog, and Yuko was in there, and he discarded an honor tile for his first discard, which is against the rules of Junkyu. And he proclaimed right there, he said, "No one, if it's better to throw the honor tile, I will."
I don't know if he still does, but a couple of years ago he was running this club in downtown Tokyo called the Otokojuku, along with Baba. Oh, it's like a mini Junkyu. They're not as strict, but they're trying to take the Junkyu philosophy and make it more practical. So it's like half spiritual mahjong and then half like self-help.
Wow.
Yeah.
I've never heard mahjong like described in those words. It's really interesting. If they still have that, I'd like to go see that.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Think we'll be seeing any of that in Europe anytime soon?
I'm not sure. I think that it's the thing for me. I don't know if it's because I didn't grow up with the Japanese education system. It's really hard for me to have just a certain rule and stick by it. Mm. I like to have a lot more flexibility, and it seems to me like a lot of people in Europe would be the same way.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know, maybe not. Yes, we'll wait and see. Yuko, the first time I ever met him was at the Kenshukai, which is like the study group when you're gonna join the league.
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember he was like, "Jen, you discard so cool." And I was really flattered by that. And so
I'm never going to have anyone say that to me.
And then we played, so three or four years later, we played in December, and he said the same thing to me again, so I guess I've kept that up.
Good for you.
Also in A2, we have one of our featured players, Takizawa. He is going to remain in A2, so there's no fear of him moving down. I think he was a little bit afraid of that. Last time we mentioned he got minus 7.6 in the 8th session in December. In the 9th session in January, he actually got a negative 40.5. You can read his comment on our website as well. In the 10th session, he came back with a positive 6.0 score to bring him to a negative 37.1 for the year. A1 and A2 are both year-long leagues, so he will be remaining. The cutoff was negative 58.9, so he was actually in quite a dangerous position for the four people that are moving down.
You know, for someone who generally looks cool in ads and posters, this picture looks like crap.
Yeah, I'm not sure about the pictures on the JPML website. I think the thing is, a lot of people didn't know there were going to be pictures. Actually, when I got mine taken, I might have known, but I didn't know how to do my makeup yet, so... I only knew because I had been there the day before and seen people taking pictures, so I tried to prepare for the next day of it. My picture also looks awful. You can see it on the Women's League site, but it's really awful. In B1 League, we have a couple of friends there. A featured player, Hisato Sasaki, who actually Ben and I were just talking about before the podcast started, because he has a book out about how he made, I think it's $100,000 playing free mahjong, which After working in a parlor for 1 month, I can tell you, seems like an impossible task. Way to go, him. he is going to remain. He got fifth place, and only the top two move up, so he has at least another year before he can move up to A2. He's still got an admirable 42.4 score. He had one negative, and one thinks maybe if that was a positive, it was negative 25.8. If that was a positive, there's a good chance he could have been moving up. Except for that the cutoff was 149, so it was still quite a long shot.
Mm.
Our good friend Shintaro Kono, the rules director for the World Series Mahjong Reach event, and also a regular columnist on ReachMahjong.com, unfortunately got last place in B1 and is going to be moving down. It looks like he was actually in okay shape, but in the very last session he had a negative 66.4 to put him in last place at 101.6. And the cutoff this time was 54.1, or 53, so if he didn't have that negative, he would still be in B1. Mm. Poor guy.
Mm-hmm.
I think, sometimes that happens, there's just nothing you can do, and yeah. It's like a downward spiral.
Still though, that negative 66.4, that might be the lowest round score. Yeah, that's the lowest number on there, yeah. Wow.
I think there's some, in the higher leagues, I think there's some lower than that. Like Yamada Hiro in A2, he got a negative 79.8. Ooh. And they're actually, A rules are considered to be really, low amount, a really small amount of point. There's not a lot of
variance
movement.
Spread, yeah.
Yeah, well, as well as the variance, but since it's hard to get the big Mangan scores, there's not a lot of exchange of points.
Yeah.
It's considered to be that way, but when you play four games in a row and when you have people at this level that are getting really big hands, even though they don't have all the Dora,
yeah,
there can be a lot of point movements. The guy above him, actually, Saito, looks like he was in last place. He got a positive 82.6.
Wow.
Oh, but he had two scores lower than the 66.
Negative
81 and negative 82.8. Just noticed that.
Oh, wow.
And also Matsubara, who's also going to move down, got a negative 68.7.
Ooh.
So there is a lot of score movement in these rules.
Yeah,
Even though you wouldn't think there would be. In B2, Rumi Nikaido, one of the famous sisters, is moving down. And actually Nikaido Aki, she is moving up to A2. She didn't play in this last session because it was already decided she'd move up to A2 from winning B1 in the first season of last year.
Mm-hmm.
So Rumi will go back down into C1, and she'll be in good company with another one of our featured players, Saki Kurosawa. She is remaining in C1, and we'll have her comment up for the end of the season in a couple of weeks. Also in there is Michi Yuki. She was our second interview ever on ReachMahjong.com. She just barely missed the cutoff for not moving down, so she'll remain in C1. In C2, another one of our featured players, Kozue Miyauchi, won the league. She got first place, even with a negative 44.3 score in the last session.
Wow.
She was
88
ahead.
Points in the first round. Wow.
Yeah, she was in first place at the beginning and kept that first place the entire season. Way to go, her. And
yeah.
You can read her comment. It's really interesting because she's doing really well, and you can see these results, but all of her comments on when we featured four players this season, and all of her comments are I really could have done better. I could have played better. So even though she's winning, she's always thinking about her game, and she's doing. It's really paying off.
Is that just to make sure that everyone else in C2 doesn't kind of, backbite her or something like that?
It might be that. And whenever I played with her, I really feel like she's really working on her game. We have some study sessions. There's a weekly study session for JPML young members, and she's always there and always trying to learn and study, and she's become really aggressive lately, which is not that common in females. A lot of them fold a lot of the times, in the league at least. Also, another columnist for us, Shintaro Kamimura, he is remaining. He got 25th place in C2 and just barely missed the cutoff to move down, so he will remain in C2. By 0.2 points, he missed the cutoff. So, way to go, him.
Yeah.
Looks like Saito Tomoko, which I believe is, she has one pro queen, and I think she usually makes the final table at pro queen. She's very well known in the league. It looks like she will be moving down to C3. Ooh. That is all of our featured players that we've talked about. So, in C3, actually one of my good friends, Ikue Watanabe, she's the one who introduced me to JPML. She actually ended up taking the season off, and it looks like there's a good chance she will be moving down to D1 if she continues to play in the league. But she might choose to just play in the women's league. The good thing about for us girls is that we can choose to just play in the women's league or play in the pro league or play in both. So I think she's moved away from Tokyo, so she might just play in the women's league from now on. And also Yukiko Izumi, who we also have interviewed on ReachMahjong.com and who is probably one of the most famous players in our league. She looks like may be in danger of moving down to D1. She's the very top of the cutoff there, so she may be saved if people quit. There is a chance that she'll move down to D1. Which is where we can now say Garth used to be. Garth got 40th place out of 41 in the D1 league, and it looks like he will be moving down to D2 with yours truly if I get saved, because actually I got 57th place out of 63 this season. Was not good. I remember in one of the, I think it was the third session, when I was the dealer, somebody drew a 13 orphans, a Kokushima Sohan. And that was just how it was all season. So I only got small negatives in the first two sessions, and the third session with that Kokushima Soh, I got a negative 50. And I was still able to hold my losses to a minimum in the fourth session with negative 19.6, but in the last session I just couldn't hold it back and I got negative 49.4. So it was not a good season for Jen, but the new season is starting in April, and hopefully I'll be saved. There's three people above me that are also moving down. And last time Garth was, I think, fourth on that list. And all four people were saved and stayed in D1. So hopefully that will be my fate as well. And if that happens, I'll be able to start anew in April. Great. The new season. And also there are tons of tournaments coming on in JPML in April. And I'm planning to play in all of them, including the North Kanto League, which is starting new, and I'm going to be playing that with Kaori Shimizu, who, if you've been reading ReachMahjong.com, you know I've been spending a lot of time with lately. She's really great. I really like hanging out with her, and she's a really big, like, senpai for us, which is like an elder in the league, and she's, you know, taught me a lot, and she's invited me to a lot of things, and I'm really grateful for that. And she also came to the Super Cup in Macau in December. And I think she's planning to go to the World Series this year, so everybody watch out. And we have some news, Mahjong news, from MahjongNews.com, thanks to Martin Rep. It looks like the world's most expensive Mahjong set is being made. This was posted on February 7th, 2009. Do you know anything about this, Ben?
Just from what I read, but 10 kilograms? Is that what that says? Wow! How do you lift those things?
I don't know. I have trouble with the 2 kilogram boxes that I have to, you know, send off from Mahjong Mart. So it's made of pure silver. I mean, the silver content is 925, and it looks like it will cost $40,000 or $50,000. So who is going to buy this? She said it's worth it.
A pung is worth $900. Look at that. Pung's worth $1,200.
Can you imagine playing Mahjong like that? And like, alright, I made this Pung, now it's $1,200. I wonder if the stakes you play have to match the cost of the Mahjong set. You can see the pictures at MahjongNews.com. We're kind of in awe over them. It looks like Jenny Schoenhoven, I'm sure I'm butchering the name. She's a silversmith in the Netherlands, the Silver Town. And she is making the set. So that means she's putting up. I wonder if she already has a buyer that to put in the investment.
Well, we don't know about now, but it looks like from the article she's still looking. But look at 8 hours. It takes her 8 hours to make one tile, and this is probably with the flower tiles, right? So that's 144 tiles times 8.
Yeah,
it's well over 1,000.
Wow. I would like to see like a red 5 and like a shirobochi, you know, the
white
with like a, the diamond in the middle.
Yeah.
It seems like that would really match the silver.
Well, I mean, as long as it's worth 40,000 euros, she could put a few diamonds in there, right?
I would think so. I wouldn't put the cost up that much percentage-wise. I would love to see something like that. She said she wants to play one game with it before she sells it off. Go her.
Yeah, very interesting.
I'm really interested in who the buyer's going to be. I hope they don't keep that anonymous. And for our last piece of Mahjong news for today, we have the OEMC of 2009, which will be happening, I believe, in June. Is that right?
I think it's from the 1st of July.
Oh, July, okay.
Yeah.
Beginning of July this year, and it will be happening at Baden in Vienna, Austria. Baden/Vienna. I've never been there, so I don't know quite what that means, and I sound dumb.
Oh no, but no! All I've heard from the Martins, the three Martins from Austria, is that it's a beautiful town. They've been talking about it since the World Championship in 2007. It looks like it's going to be absolutely great.
Awesome! I really wish I could go. It looks like there's a huge list of people going already, though. A huge number from the Netherlands and France. Also Austria, Italy, a few from Spain, and a couple from Finland. And a bunch from Japan as well. Our friends the Kugimiyas will be there, as well as Masato Chiba, who has played in almost all of the ReachMahjong.com events. And also played in the World Series of Mahjong in September.
And won the first European Championship.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Also, Shigeru Aono, who got fourth place at the World Series of Mahjong last year and attends a lot of the international tournaments with the Chinese official rules. There's also a number of people from Hungary, Denmark.
Oh, don't forget Idoda. He just won the Japanese championship.
Is that for the Chinese official rules?
For the Chinese rules. For the Chinese rules.
Wow. So Japan will be very well represented.
Mm.
And we also have two players from Russia already signed up, and a number of players from Germany. So, if you are in Europe or you are able to be there during that time, make sure you stop by, because those events are always a lot of fun. Even the Reach Championship last year with only 80 players was a blast, and we met a lot of really cool people. So make sure, if you can make it, get over there. Are you going to be there, Ben?
We're working on an American team.
Okay. Well, if you are there, I hope you will take lots of pictures for me. And anyone who is there, please send in some letters so we can do some emails or something, so we can do a thing on the website about it, since I won't be able to make it. Also, make sure you write on the forums about it, and maybe you can get together with some people before the tournament. Now we're going to take another short break, and we'll come back to talk about Ben.
ReachMahjong.com is the number one source for Mahjong strategy discussion and Mahjong news from Asia. Visit our site to find out how you can use ReachMahjong.com to reach Mahjong players and professionals all over the world. We can even report live from your event. For more information, visit ReachMahjong.com or email advertise@ReachMahjong.com to see how you can buy time and space with Reach.
And we're back with Benjamin Boaz, who I usually call Ben, and I hope I'm pronouncing your name mostly right.
Ben's fine.
I think I was talking about Boaz, because I was always not sure if I should say Boaz or Boaz.
Actually, you're getting it right. I get in a lot of other various pronunciations, but pronouncing it like a Z is correct.
Okay.
Poor Japanese people, though, they can't quite put the vowels together, so usually I just introduce myself with my first name.
Yeah. Okay. Good. I actually used to say Boaz, but then yesterday when I heard you say Boaz, I changed it.
Oh. I didn't even notice.
So we're here with Ben, and he has been studying. I know he came to Japan to study Mahjong on a Fulbright scholarship, which is an amazing feat all in itself. And thanks to that, he's been quite the subject of Kindai Mahjong, the most famous Mahjong magazine in Japan, and featured in there. So even when he comes to my parlor, he is somewhat of a celebrity. So we are very happy to have him today.
Happy to be here.
And he's recently moved from Kyoto to Yokohama. And what brought on that move, first of all?
Well, my Fulbright fellowship at Kyoto University ended last September. And I've begun study as a research student at the Inter-University Center for Japanese Language Studies in Yokohama. It's basically an intensive Japanese language school for people in Japan-focused careers. So essentially, I'm learning how to sound and write intelligent in Japanese, which is something I've been working on, and I don't know if I'll ever actually accomplish. It's a year well spent, I think.
Wow, that's really good. So when you say a research student, it means you're researching the language, or are you still continuing your Mahjong research?
I continue the Mahjong research as much as I can, but the coursework for the school is quite heavy. Usually it's about 4 hours of class every day, plus about maybe 5, 6, 7, 8 or more hours of homework. So sometimes it's hard to find time to do other things. Luckily, in the last semester coming up, we lose half of those class hours. So hopefully I can kind of get back into the world a little bit more, interviewing people, doing a little bit more fielder, as they said.
Oh, good. Well, with all of that homework time, then you've still found a lot of times to write on our forums, and we're very grateful for that.
It's an obsession.
So you guys can chat with Ben as well on the forums and on his blog. I want to know a little bit about the research. Mm-hmm. So you're still doing research for a degree in the United States for a master's?
No, it's all pretty much free right now. But before I get into that, I just wanted to say one thing about the forums. Thank you so much to everyone who's replying to my comments and joining in the discussion. I know I get a little bit hot-headed about things. When I first started learning about the game, and I'm sure there's the same for Jen, but back in 2004, there were no forums online, there were no other people to talk about this in English, so it's really, really nice to have you right now. So that being said, getting back to the research thing, I'm not in any degree program right now, so I'm essentially doing it as a freelance researcher, as you say. I do have an affiliation in Japan with a university in Osaka that has a special research institute for the study of amusement industries, which is basically gambling and other games. So I suppose you could say I do my research for them, but it's not really for a degree.
Okay. So with the Fulbright scholarship, when that finished, did you have to submit some things, or what do they do with that when that's done?
Well, when you finish the Fulbright Fellowship, you have to submit a final paper to the Japanese U.S. Educational Commission. So I submitted about a 40-page paper on the role of Mahjong in social relations between office workers in Japan in the 1970s before the bubble. And basically what my thesis was that...
So all you listeners, if you could put your phones on vibrate during the podcast.
So getting back to my thesis. I basically argued that the gambling element in Mahjong, that is the fact that you're putting money on the game, actually helped to bring people together when they played. And that that this sort of role of Mahjong for bringing people together was something that the Japanese government and Japanese companies realized and actually supported economically. Mm-hmm. So companies would essentially pay employees indirectly, but they would pay them to play Mahjong both amongst themselves and with employees of other companies. And the government funded and constructed entertainment centers for its employees, for public sector workers, where they would play Mahjong. So even today, most of these places have been shut down, but even today, one of the main ministries of Japan, has an entertainment center affiliated with it, where there is a mahjong parlor. There's a mahjong parlor in the center, and it is funded by taxpayer money.
Wow, that's really interesting.
Yours too.
Is that someplace that you can visit? Or?
Well, I've been there. You can't play in there unless you're affiliated with the ministry.
Oh.
I mean, it's not in, like, a compound or anything. You just walk right in there off the street.
Oh, so it just looks like a mahjong parlor, or?
I don't even remember what it looks like from the outside. But, it's kind of like this, you know, a mid-sized kind of, like, underground shop. Where there's three rooms. There's a bar, there's a karaoke room, and there's a mahjong room.
Wow, that's really interesting. I had no idea about that kind of stuff coming to Japan in 2001. And by that time, mahjong was already pretty much in the same form that it is now, 8 years later.
Yeah, it's not quite as visible as it was back during its heyday in the 70s. Mm-hmm. I think the... what was it? Back in 1972, about 40% of men in the country played.
Wow.
And most of those were white-collar workers, so people working in offices, people with college degrees. It was so popular that people said that if you didn't know how to play, you couldn't get into a first-rate company.
Wow. Yeah, it is true. You hear the older guys, and they say, you know, when they were in college, everybody was playing in college. So
yeah,
that's where they learned, and I guess that was part of their education.
No, it's pretty amazing. I was at Kyoto University last year. Kyoto University is the number two school in the nation. It's quite elite. You know, it's the American equivalent of Yale, the English equivalent of Oxford, Cambridge, I suppose. And students would play there all the time, but people would tell me that back in the 70s, the main streets around the college were just littered with mahjong parlors. Like, you would find multiple parlors on the same block, all around the university, and they'd barely compete with one another because they were so popular.
Mm-hmm.
So professors would, you know, end their lecture and then take all of the students with them to the mahjong parlor and spend the rest of the day there, or so I've been told.
Wow. I think the percentage of people playing now is about 10% of the Japanese population. Is a number that I heard from somebody.
Yeah, it's around there.
Is that pretty accurate?
Yeah.
Well, it's nice to have somebody who, like, has studied these things to be able to ask that kind of stuff. So what are you doing now as far as the mahjong? You said you try to find some spare time. You're playing in tournaments, or do you play in free mahjong parlors, or how are you spending your time, your free time, little as it may be?
I really haven't been able to play much this year. I've recently started getting back to one free parlor in Shibuya where I play a lot. I'm so rusty, it's embarrassing. I wish I could find the time to play a little bit more online. I've been playing on Tenho a little bit, but as a lot of listeners know, it's a big time vacuum there.
Yeah.
So I've been trying to cut down on that. I did play in a pretty interesting tournament a couple of Mondays ago. The Mahjong Emperor Tournament, I suppose you could call it, which is hosted by two fairly well-known people in the mahjong world. A Mr. Yamazaki, also known as the boss of the silver ball, because he used to write about pachinko.
Oh, okay.
He runs the Tanu brand of mahjong parlors, also partially along with a famous manga artist named Rieko Saibara. And they hosted...
And what does she write?
None of her stuff is really, really famous outside of Japan, but I think her most famous work in Japan right now is called Mainichi Kaisan. It's serialized in the Mainichi newspaper.
Okay.
She's kind of on the up and up right now. One of her manga just got made into an anime. I think another one's being made into a feature film next year.
Wow, that's really exciting.
But 10, 15 years ago, when she wasn't so famous, she used to write mahjong comics.
Mm-hmm.
So one of them, Mahjong Hodoki, all in hiragana. Not the other Mahjong Hodoki.
Okay.
is one of the first Mahjong comics I ever read, and it's kind of what got me into, you know, what is Mahjong? Why are there comics about it? You know, why is this crazy lady writing about, you know, putting $10,000 on a single game, which is what she's famous for. So I was really, really hoping I'd be able to play with her at this tournament, and unfortunately I wasn't able to do that. But I was able to get second, so that was pretty cool.
Second?
Yeah.
Why'd you get second?
Because your friend knocked me into second from first place. I made it into the final round along with two other people whose names I don't remember and your friend Cody. And I was in first place up until the very last round, beating her, I think, by about 7,700 points. And she leeches. I fold, of course, because if she doesn't win, then I win. And another person throws her the winning tile, four character. She goes out 8,000 points and just kind of beats me. But the really unfortunate thing is that the four character tile was the only tile that she could have won on. She was winning on a 3-5 Kanchan weight. Uh-huh. So she won on one of those tiles. The other three had been in my hand from the very beginning.
Wow.
So if the other guy just had chosen to throw in a different tile, and he was throwing it from 1, 2, 3, 4, so he could have thrown 4 or 1. If he had chosen the one, if he had chosen any other tile, I probably would have won. So it was quite a lucky break on her part.
Talk about drawing slim. Why did he choose the 4 instead of the 1? I think a lot of people, 2 or reach, would choose the 1 in that situation.
I decided not to ask him. And then to be honest, the players in that tournament, I think above half of them were pros, and the rest of them were not officially pros, but were probably good at the pro level, like people who owned Mahjong parlor chains. The guy who owns Tenho was there. Guy who owns Tenho was playing. So these people were pretty good players, and I still managed to get second. So I feel pretty lucky about that.
So he probably had his reasons.
Hmm?
I say he probably had his reasons then. If most of the people are at that level, he probably had his reasons for the 4.
I'm not sure about that, but like I said, I'm trying not to think about it too hard.
I see. Well, that's great. Second place is very admirable. And you know, Kaori Shimizu, she is one of the only females, if not the only female, to have ever won the OE tournament in JPML.
Hmm.
Also, she's won Pro Queen and many other smaller tournaments, so there is definitely no shame in second place to her. That's pretty amazing on your part. When you're in Japan, I think that you've probably met, in the Mahjong industry in Japan, more people than a lot of pros even have ever met, more influential people than even a lot of pros, a lot of people in the pro league have ever met. Who do you think is the most interesting person you've ever met that you can talk about?
who's the most interesting person I've ever met? Huh. It would take me a while to find the number one, but a certain pro in the highest league, who we'll call Mr. A, certainly stands out. Mr. A, I met, I guess it's been about 3 years ago now, in Kabukicho. Which
very fitting for a Mahjong pro.
Which for listeners who don't know, Kabukicho is a place in Shinjuku in Tokyo, which is kind of, it's probably the biggest red light district in Japan.
Mm.
Not a very friendly place, quite a dark place, and also sometimes thought of as the capital of the Mahjong world in some respects.
Mm.
Or certainly in Mahjong comics and Mahjong shows, they usually feature Kabukicho. So I was meeting with this guy because he's quite well known in other respects, and I wanted to talk to him about what a Uda pro did. And
Uda is kind of like underground.
Mm. An underground pro. So someone who isn't famous for, say, you know, playing big famous matches, but who kind of plays Mahjong for money and really subsides off of it.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy does that. He gets together with company presidents. They play for rates, which are quite higher than the standard tango or tempin. He's much better than them, so he collects a large amount of cash, puts it into a duffel bag, holds it over his shoulder, and then goes and plays in the league matches.
Wow. Does he... these kind of underground pros, not necessarily specifically that pro, but I'm sure he would fall in this category, do they make an effort to lose a certain amount to keep the company presidents coming back, or do they just go ahead and clean up every time?
Well, what this guy said is that he does try to lose a little bit. I don't know specifically, and I didn't ask him about specific tactics, but I suspect that to some extent you don't actually have to that much. There's enough variance in the game that you're not going to win every single session.
Mm-hmm.
And the presidents who are playing against you know that in the long run they're going to come up behind. If they don't know that, then they probably don't mind.
Mm-hmm.
The company presidents, even at a very high rate, the money isn't going to matter to them that
right.
much. But I think what they're playing for is that kind of one session where they manage to beat Mr. A, which is probably worth more to them than all the other losing sessions put together. So I think while that sort of thing is on his mind, it's not as important as you might think. What's probably more important is you know, praising the presidents when they win,
mm-hmm.
or you know, telling them that you know, oh, they're so much better than he expected, things like that.
I see.
To some extent, he's an entertainer.
Yeah. Right, and I actually, although I don't play that high rates, after starting the Mahjong Parlor in February, I guess we haven't mentioned that on the podcast. I opened the Mahjong Parlor at the beginning of February, which I wrote an article on the site, and there's been a little bit of talk on the forums about it. It's a non-smoking parlor, and Ben has come and played for us twice now, I think. And we had a good time. We played last night, and it was really fun. Unfortunately, Yoko, who is also another face on the parlor since she owns the ferry in Shinjuku, had to leave before Ben could play with her. But anyway, we played last night, and I've noticed that after opening that parlor, you know, there's a fair amount of entertainment that goes in as the member, especially as a female pro member who is basically the face of the parlor. It, you know, you have to be a little bit careful sometimes, and it's not all the players, because most people at this time, I know that Kamimura wrote an article about manners, and you actually asked the question about how about winning in third place when you're in third place, or winning in fourth place when you don't move up to third place, things like that. And there's a lot to think about, because some of the players actually do, you know, care, and I believe that, you know, the players who do care are a little bit weaker than the ones who don't care, because a lot of times if somebody does something that you think is very weak as a player, you want to be happy because it means you're better than them.
Right.
But as far as that goes, being in the position where you have to, like, praise the people, even if they don't do something not very good, when they win, and also, you know, winning graciously and sometimes apologizing for winning.
Well, don't you have to apologize every time you win?
When you win the game, you have to say, have to apologize. You don't have to apologize for every single hand that you win. But there are certain hands that you kind of have to apologize for. Like if you reach and then you get three hidden dora,
right,
then you kind of have to apologize for that because you're like, oh, sorry, I didn't realize it was going to be so much. You know, it's a really different experience. So I imagine, although it's a completely different situation, the kind of mindset is very similar to what Mr. A had that you were saying.
Yeah.
So that's really interesting. Yeah. Ben has met so many people, like even more people than me in the mahjong industry.
You sure?
Although, yeah, I think some of the people are different. Obviously, I'm much more in with most of the JPML pros.
Mm-hmm.
But you've definitely met a more wide spectrum of the mahjong industry. And so it's really interesting to talk to Ben. And unfortunately, not all of his stories he can say on this podcast. But that was a really great story, and thanks for saying that. Is there anything else that you want to talk about before we wrap up for the day?
Can't think of anything on top of my head. Keep listening, keep posting at the forums. Keep bugging me to continue my blog. the more people bug me, the more I want to write, so I could use your help there.
What's the easiest way to access your blog?
Just a direct link. It's mahjongfulbright.blogspot.com. If you Google my name, Benjamin Boaz, it should show up near the top. You could also put a link on reachmahjong.com.
Yeah, we'll go ahead and put a link on this podcast as well, so you can go straight to it from the content item of this podcast. One last thing, actually, I just remembered that we wanted to talk about before we say goodbye to Ben for the day. He's been writing articles for the English magazine in Japan, or the English free paper, I'm sorry, in Japan, The Metropolis. And what was your last article about?
My last article was on the relationship between Japanese gamblers and statistics. A number of readers might be familiar with this story, but a good number of Mahjong players and some other gamblers who I've talked to in Japan don't really think much of statistics, don't really think much of math when it comes to gambling. Think that you win when you're lucky, you lose when you're unlucky, and there isn't too much in between that. And you know, when you're betting on whether a coin comes up heads or tails, that might not be so important. But if you're, say, trying to play roulette and come out in the long run, a dismissal of concepts like expected value or house edge, well, it's probably not going to make you too much money.
So, can you see the article online? Metropolis has a lot of articles online.
Yeah, if you, I posted a link on my blog, and it's been discussed, I think it has its own thread in the forum, in fact, so you can access it from those links. Google my name in Metropolis Magazine, it should probably show up there. But it's an interesting article. I hope listeners get a chance to read it.
I think I'm going to print that out and take it to the parlor, actually, because I know at least one of our players is very into statistics, and he's very into the math of even of the Mahjong. So he will probably find that very interesting. That's great. And now we're going to take a short break. Thank you very much, Ben, for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
We'll be back to wrap up the show after this.
This is Mahjong.
Do you need high quality Mahjong tiles? Do you have the tiles ready but just need the scoring sticks? Maybe you want to reach Mahjong.com keychain or t-shirt. You can get all this and more at MahjongMart.com. If you're short on cash at the moment, win gift certificates at our weekly meetups on JPML's run too. For more information, visit reachmahjong.com or mahjongmart.com.
And we're back to wrap up the show. We went quite a bit longer than usual for this month, but we didn't have a podcast in January, and also we had Ben here, and so we really wanted to take advantage of the opportunity. Since we rarely have interviews. And we will be on the forums for the next month until the next podcast comes out. We'll have a lot of articles coming your way. We're looking for a pro interview with Naoki Setokuma, who won the very first ever ReachMahjong.com Cup. There's a thread on the forums, so if you have any questions to ask Naoki Setokuma, he is also in the A1 league, so it should be a pretty exciting interview. He came to the Mahjong Super Cup with Yuko Ito. And we would really like to ask questions that you guys want to ask, so please post those on the forum. Also, we have a new website coming. I know we've been saying that we're going to start with the Japanese site, which is going to bring information from overseas into Japan about Reach Mahjong and other types of Mahjong. I think that's about it for today. Thank you again to our guest, Ben. It was really exciting to interview him, and I'm glad that we didn't have a January podcast so we could go over it this month. It turned out to be a really great opportunity. So thank you very much, and we'll be back to you in March with the podcast. Under all funk, like a headlock and a skunk. Reeking like disease, athlete's feet. The stench didn't come till after this beat. Smelling like draws, no reason, no cause. Put your hands up on the speaker, get smelly as paws. You knew we was coming before we entered the door, cause you could smell the rhyme when we was walking down the hall. We bring the funk worse than a wet dog. Thinking like fat lady shitting out logs. We dropping up shit and keep the toilets clogged. The people jumping like them bullfrogs. The first one that smells, it ain't the one who dealt it. Black eyed peas keep the scent flying like Delta. Bumpy like onions, you crying? Now
you ain't lying.
If it's girls like that, it must be us. The phone, phone call bells is making stuff. If it's girls like that, it must be us. The phone, phone call bells is making stuff. If it smells like funk, it must be us. The funk, 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 funk,